When we look at cloud, we're talking about a service that we're delivering to a customer, not the individual VMs. Okay? If we start to try and manage just VMs, it's going to get very messy when you scale out. If you have customers and you've got 10,000 VMs, do you really want to be looking at through 10,000 VMs trying to find the customer's VMs? Or do you want to look at a cloud service approach where we say, okay, this customer has a service with us, and we can then browse via the services instead of trying to search through thousands of VMs. So we're really finding there's a lot of pressure and a lot of responsibility coming onto the service provider shoulders, and especially the engineering teams. We're having management from service providers and enterprise customers wanting services faster and faster every day. They're wanting remediation processes to be executed in minutes or seconds instead of hours. So if a customer wants a service pack, they want it done very quickly and in an automated fashion, not having to wait for an engineer to be allocated and then do the deployments. Also making this system very highly scalable, but in an automated fashion. So they want to be able to scale out on demand, not necessarily have to wait for an engineer to then go and build servers out. We're trying to get to a point where an engineer pretty much just goes, plugs a server into a rack, patches it in, plugs the power in, powers it on, and then lets the system do all the automation processes. So we're really talking about removing the manual workloads that are existing today. We're also talking about a platform that is totally resilient, so that we can lose physical servers, we can lose some virtual machines, and your platform isn't going to fall over. So when you do your designs, one of the big things we find is service providers are thinking about, well, I want to make sure my hypervisor platform is fully redundant. So we'll build clusters, we'll build technology there. But when it comes to the automation pieces, we're finding service providers and enterprise customers aren't necessarily too worried about the high availability of those products. But I can tell you now, if you don't worry about that high availability of your Windows Azure portal server or your VMM environment or the databases that VMM and Ops Manager use and don't cluster and make them highly available, when you have an outage and a customer can't stop or start their VM through the interface, I can guarantee you you're going to get calls about it. And I'm sure you'll change your opinion of how important it is to have that highly available as well. So with System Center 2012, we can delegate and give customers the abilities to do their self-provisioning. We can also, in Virtual Machine Manager, give them dedicated individual roles and features. So you could actually create a user role that enables someone to only read information about their VMs. They won't be able to start and stop them, but they could go and see how they're configured, which is what I like to call the CIO or the CTO user login. Okay, so the CIO of the organizer or the hosting company wants to be able to see everything, but you don't want him touching or doing anything. Okay, you want him to be able to look but not touch. We also have the ability to do end-to-end management of your virtual data center platform. So with System Center Suite, we're able to manage the storage, manage the network, manage the virtualization layer of both cloud, the storage fabric, the network fabric, the CPU, the hardware, the whole layer. So cloud management, we have the application usage, we have capacity and capability considerations to take into effect. Delegation and quotas. What permissions and roles and features do I want to delegate to customers? Or even within my own engineering team. Do I want my level one help desk guys being able to do anything to VMs other than maybe just start them and stop them? Do they need to be able to create clouds? Do they need to be able to create templates? Probably not. So it's about being able to do that delegation, not only just to your customers, but your internal staff as well. We're also talking about service management. So service templates, being able to deploy services time and time again in exactly the same manner. Not having engineers having to build servers the exact same way every time in a manual process and hope that they all install on the same process. Okay? Finding engineers that follow documentation is like finding chicken with teeth. Okay? It doesn't happen very often. we really need to make sure that we're following the procedures that we have. So service templating and VM templates are the easiest way to deliver that, okay? We also have image-based servicing. So if you do service templates and deployments, it's also about, well, okay, if a new version of the application comes out, how can I deploy that again into the environment without having to redo everything? Fabric management, being able to grab a bare metal server, put it in the rack, and have the system automatically build it. Do you really want engineers sitting there putting DVDs into DVD drives, booting a server, or booting off a USB disk? Okay? You want the system to automatically provision those. That enables you to scale out faster, and you also have a consistent platform because the system is automatically building each server the same way. Okay? You don't have an engineer that decides that, okay, I'm going to build this server as core, I'm going to build this one with a GUI because I can't be bothered doing core today, I can't think. So it's a whole matter of making sure it's a consistent platform. We also have the ability to manage other hypervisors. So not just being restricted to Hyper-V, but being able to manage the other hypervisors that you may have in your environment. Network management, storage management, being able to do that from one interface. Dynamic optimizations. How many of you at the moment have a product out of the box that you haven't had to go and pay third-party money for to optimize the workloads across your physical boxes? So making sure that all your VMs are evenly distributed across your hosts. How many of you can do that today? No one. How many people in the room are green? Okay? One of the big industry things that customers are looking for is, I want to minimize my carbon footprint. How many of you in the room automatically power off physical boxes when they're not needed? How many of you move your VM workloads around and say, you know what? At 2 o'clock in the morning, I don't need 20 hosts running, I only need 10. How many of you power down the other 10? Anyone? No. Okay, so if carbon footprints and green and making sure customers are happy that you're doing the best you can for the environment, okay, we can deliver that as well. But it's also about saving you money, okay? Data centers are moving to power consumption charges based on hourly rates and things like that. So if you're able to power off servers when they're not needed, you're saving yourself money there as well. We also have the ability to do monitoring integrations where we're able to analyze the performance of your servers, not just your physical boxes, but the VMs, and give that analysis information to customers so they can make better business decisions about whether they need to upgrade VMs to more RAM, more CPU, add more additional VMs. Okay? So it's giving you that information to make business decisions at both your service provider level, but also passing that to the end customer. So a couple of the technologies and terminologies that we're going to be going through over the rest of the next couple of sessions is cloud, okay? When you go into Virtual Machine Manager, you are going to be seeing clouds, okay? When we go into VMM, we're also going to see tenants. They're things that weren't in previous versions of Virtual Machine Manager. These features became part of System Center in SP1, okay? So 2012 SP1 was where we first started to see clouds and tenants and the true multi-tenant capability being incorporated into the System Center products. We can create predefined logical networks. We can create load balancers. We can have VMM manage your load balancers. So when a customer creates VMs that need a load balance VIP, do you want to have to manually go and create that VIP? Or do you want the system to automatically generate that for you? We're also talking about storage classifications, allocating classifications against your storage, fast disk, slow disk, different tiered storage. We can tag and allocate that appropriately. Giving customers their own libraries, okay, so they can upload their own templates and ISOs. But also the compute with logical grouping of your hosts or clusters into host groups. Okay, it's going to give you a lot of flexibility as you go forward so that you can assign a specific host to either dedicated customers, your shared clouds, dedicated clouds, whatever it is. being able to do the logical network with IP MAC address pools, load balancer IP pools, all that sort of thing. We also have delegation, as I said earlier, being able to give quotas per customer, per user within that customer. Okay, so we're able to do a lot of customization in VMM for user permissions and quotas at a very granular level, and you'll see that when we go through the demonstration a little bit later. We have cloud and server-centric approaches to everything in System Center now. So when we go through and we're going to deploy a finance application or a HR application, does the customer want to know that every individual server is online, or do they only need to know that their HR or finance application is in line? Okay? So when you go through VMM or Ops Manager or any of the System Center suite, do you just want to see that the customer's service is online, or do you need to see the 20 or 30 servers individually? Okay? Most of you probably only need to know whether the service is up or down. So we're taking that server-centric approach and we're incorporating that into the System Center products. So we'll see the service at the top, and then we'll see the layers that make up that service when we drill down. So that we can see if there's web servers or application servers or database servers, and then we can see the compute, the storage, and the networks that make up that service. Okay? So we're taking a very service-centric approach to everything we're doing going forward in System Center. So instead of managing 20 to 30 objects, we're managing one object. So service templates is a feature in Virtual Machine Manager where we're actually able to configure the way we want a VM and the OS and applications that sit on top of the VM deployed. So how many of you at the moment when you deploy a VM can automatically have SQL installed on top of it? One person. Or when you deploy a web server, it goes and installs all the IIS features and roles and services that you need installed. Okay? We're not talking about a sysprepped image that already has IIS on it. We're talking about deploying a core OS that has nothing installed on it and then adding those features during the installation process. So the way we're able to deliver that is with service templates in VMM. So what we have is we have a hardware profile where we specify the CPU, the RAM, the networks, the disks that we need associated with that VM. We then have our OS profile, which is where we set our OS settings. Do you want it domain joined? Do you want to add IIS features and roles? Do you want to add any other Windows features and roles, whether it's terminal services, whether it's file sharing, whether it's, DNS, DHCP, what other roles and features from the Windows services do you want installed? What time zone do you want the server built in? All of those normal things that you pick when you go through a Windows deployment, we can pre-configure in the OS settings. And then we have our application profiles. So when we look at a web tier, we're really talking about being able to use MS Deploy or Web Deploy or other pre-packaged deployment processes like Platform Installer or something like that. We then look at the application tier where we would have the same sort of hardware and OS profiles, but we then have our application profiles for configuration and application virtualization. So if you use AppV to virtualize your applications, we can then, once the VM's built, we can also have it then go and deploy those hosted applications as well. We then have our data tier, where we have our still existing same hardware and OS profiles that you want to pick from. But then we have our application profile, which is designed for SQL. In that application profile, we can pre-configure your service instance name. We can pick what service accounts you want to use, whether you want TCP/IP or named pipes, what protocols do you want turned on, what features do you want deployed, do you want just a database engine, do you want analysis services, do you want reporting services, all those sort of things that we would configure in a SQL INI file or a manual wizard process, okay, we can pre-configure in the SQL application profile. So once we've built these, we store them in our VMM service template library. So to deploy your VMs and your service provider cloud using VMM, it's a pretty four-step easy process. Okay, the first part is we configure the fabric. So we bring in all your Hyper-V hosts, we configure in all your networks and storage. Once we've done all that and pulled it all together, we create a cloud. That cloud is a pool of resources, so it specifies which hosts are in the cloud, what resources are available. So you may create a cloud that only has half the RAM and half the CPU count that the hosts have. We could also create your networks and storage that are available. How much storage space do you want to give that cloud? How many networks do you want to give that cloud, or what network adapters do you want to give that cloud access to? We then delegate the cloud to a self-service user. So we can specify which users can delegate and deploy VMs into that cloud, or create service templates or VM templates. And then step four is the fun part, where you start deploying the VMs into those customers' private clouds. So it's a pretty straightforward four-step process. We're able to group your resources in a logical manner. Okay? So with the VM templates and VM clouds, we're able to group things together so they're presented in a nice, easy-to-follow process. We can view the deployed services as well as the VMs. Okay? So if you notice, up here, we have overview, VMs, and services. So I can either just list all my VMs, or I can click on the services and it will show me the services that are available. And then if I drill down and expand, it will show me the VMs and services that fit in underneath it. And you'll also see down here, let me zoom in for you. We can see that we have grouping down here where we have all hosts, we've got Contoso production, and then we've got Hyper-V servers. I could have customer A, customer B, if we're giving them dedicated resources, or I could have my shared hardware, I could have my dedicated hardware. I can break those groups up into a whole different range of ways. So we can also connect to physical infrastructure. So when we go through the cloud create wizard, we can specify the storage that we want that cloud to utilize. We can also control the amount of cloud resources available. So I can tick the use maximum and it'll use whatever resources the hosts have access to. So the amount of CPU, the amount of memory, the amount of storage. Okay, we can specify those quota figures. So I can either leave them as maximums, or I can go in and say, you're only allowed to use 400 virtual CPUs, or you can only create 200 VMs, or you can only create VMs using 20 gig of RAM. You can create unlimited number of VMs, but you can only use 20 gig of RAM. So there's multiple ways we can configure that capacity. We can also control the types of VMs that users can deploy to. Okay? Do you want them to just deploy to your Hyper-V cloud? Do you want them to be able to deploy their VMs to any of the cloud services you offer, whether it's Hyper-V, Xen, Citrix, or VMware? Or do you want to create your own that has your own configuration settings? Okay? You can configure the types of capability profiles yourself. So if you're not happy with the default Hyper-V, Xen, and VMware ones, you could create your own profile and customize that to meet your requirements. So we really have two different competing views and information that we need to be able to give. We need to be able to give consumers the views that they need to be able to maintain and run their own operation. Okay? So they want to be able to see the capacity available to them, the capabilities that they have. They want to see the libraries of either VMs or ISOs that they're able to use. They also want to see the logical networks and load balancers that they have available to deploy to, or the fact that they can deploy a load balanced VM. They want to see the storage classification types, if you have them, that are available to them. Let the customers pick whether they want their VM stored on SSD or SATA or SAS or storage spaces. So being able to give them the choice. Then we have our service provider view, which is what you and your administrators are probably going to want to see. You're going to want to know about the hosts that make up the environment, the clusters that you have, how many library servers you have and how they're performing. You want to see the IP address pools. You want to see the MAC address pools. All the customer cares about is seeing a VM that has an IP address. They don't care what pools you have. All they care about is that when they deploy a VM, it gets an IP address. The storage pools, the storage arrays. The customer doesn't need to know whether it's a NetApp or whether it's a EMC box or what the storage is. All the customer cares about is I have storage available to me and the type of storage. They don't care about the brands and how many you have at the back end. All they care about is what resources are available to them. But you as a service provider, you need to be concerned about that. So that's the views that you're going to want to see. Role-based access is critical. We don't want to give people too many permissions or too much access. So the default roles that are configured in VMM are the administrator role. This administrator role gives you access to everything. Our recommendation is this role is used once to deploy the environment. After the environment's deployed, you don't use that role again. Okay? Think of it as your super user role, your root admin. It is used for configuring the environment at the very start. After that, you should not have to use it. You should be able to use the delegated administrator roles where you can create clouds, you can create and add hosts and everything else that you would need to do on a daily basis. We then have our self-service user role, which would be what we would give users if you wanted to give them access to Virtual Machine Manager. Okay? If you're using WAP or a third-party control panel, you wouldn't have to worry about it. But if you're going to give them access to your VMM, that would be where you would create a self-server user role, where you specify what clouds they can access, what templates, what deployment managing of VMs they can do, share resources, revoke actions, quotas, they can do all that sort of configuration. And then, as I said, we have our CIO, CTO, or whatever other name you want to call it, IT manager. That's their role, the read-only one. All right, we only want them logging in, seeing what they've got available to them, how they're performing. They don't want to go and actually start and stop VMs, or actually you probably don't want them to. All right, so we really need to make sure that we have the ability. Now, these are the default roles. You can go and create your own role. So if you have specific needs that you want to give to a specific user, whether it's a level one help desk person, level two, level three, and an end user, you can specify a more generic or a more granular permission access role. So when we create a user role, we can assign actions to that user role. So let me zoom in so you can see some of the options that we have here. So when I create a user role, I can actually tick boxes on what access and permissions I want them to have. So I can go in and say, you know what, I want them to be able to create virtual machine templates. Or you can say, no, I don't want them to. If I want them, I tick the box. If I don't want them to have it, I don't tick. Do I want them to be able to deploy virtual machines? Do I want them to be able to save them, start them, stop them, share them? What individual things do I want them to do? So if you want your level one help desk guys to only have the ability to go in and start a VM if it's stopped, you could create a user role called level one help desk, go in and tick the box that says start and no other box. And when they log in, all they'll be able to do is click the start button on a VM. That's it. Okay? So we can go to a very granular level, which is not what we were able to do in previous versions. Okay? It's new in 2012 from SP1 and above. We're able to do this granular level of changes to permissions. So we also have the ability to set quotas. So when we go to the granular level, when we create our user roles, okay, when we go to the quotering component, I can specify a quota for that user role, but I can also specify a quota for the users inside that user role. So I could say, okay, I've got a user role for my development team. Okay, I want my development team to be able to create 100 virtual CPUs. They can use 100 virtual CPUs when they create their VMs. But I'm going to limit them to only be able to create 50 VMs total. So the user role can only ever have 50. So my dev department can only create 50 VMs. Okay? I don't care the RAM or the storage. They can use whatever they want, but they're only allowed to create 50 VMs and use 100 virtual CPUs. Then I go, you know what? Each individual user that's a member of that dev team, I don't want them, I don't want one of those users to be able to go and create 50 VMs and then no one else can. Okay? So we're going to create a member level quota where we specify that each individual user can use a maximum of 100 CPUs, but I'm going to limit each user to 10 VMs. So any user who's a member of that dev role can only create 10 VMs. Okay, so if I've got five staff in that team, each one can create 10, and that gives me my 50. So we're able to do a lot of granular quotering and resource management as well. So when we look at service and application management, we're able to manage multi-tier applications across multiple servers. So when we do the service templates and the service-centric approach, we're not worrying about just individual servers. We're worrying about the whole application as a whole. We're able to scale out on demand. If we have a service template that pre-configures how servers are deployed, we can scale out additional servers very rapidly on demand. So if a customer says, you know what, I now need another 2 web servers for my web application, we've templated that so we can very easily, rapidly deploy an additional 2. We don't have to wait for an admin to go and build a couple of VMs and then go and install, copy the web applications, and configure the SSL certificates and everything else. It also gives us a more scalable, but also standardized and predictable service. If I can guarantee my customers that the VMs that they're using are generated in exactly the same way every time, that means that they're going to have the same experience every time. So if I have a customer that says, I want a SQL Server, I deploy the template, it deploys it in exactly the same way as the previous 10 times I've done it. So when a customer rings me and says, I've got a problem, I know something has been changed. Okay, how many of you at the moment when your engineers deploy a SQL Server can guarantee that he's deployed it the way you wanted him to deploy it? He hasn't forgotten to tick a box. He didn't forget to maybe add an account that should have been added. Okay, we're talking about being able to minimize human error. Okay, humans, we're our worst enemy. All right, we make sure that we make mistakes. I don't know why, but we all can't seem to do the same task 100 times exactly the same. Okay? We always make a mistake somewhere. We're human. We always make mistakes. Is that better? So, service manager, we're able to manage the services, okay? So in System Center, we have the ability to control the services. So if you wanted to, you could give customers access to Service Manager and they can log tickets, and those support tickets could kick off deployments of VMs. We also have Server App V, so that if you want to abstract the applications from the VM, we can deploy a VM, like a terminal server is a perfect example. We deploy the terminal server VM, but we don't want to manually install Office on every terminal server. So we stream with application virtualization Office to the terminal server. That way, if we want to change the terminal server from 2012 to 2012 R2, I don't need to redeploy the applications. We've streamed those applications and virtualized them. So I rebuild the OS drive with R2, and the applications just get re-added on top when the users log in. We don't need to install manually Office or any of the other applications that sit on top. It makes the process for us to upgrade customers much simpler and faster. So we have our templates, which are your starting point for building anything. You need a VM template so that you can build your service templates, your hardware profiles, and everything else. We want to be able to make sure we have instances where we have groups of machines pulled together to pull your services out. We want to be able to have virtual applications and database configurations. You don't want to manually deploy them. So the service delivery lifecycle, when we look at a service template, we define our resources and performance requirements, and we provision the application from the VMM library. We create a new template. We choose the most appropriate cloud we want that template deployed to. We deploy the process. We start the deployment process, whether it's through the self-service portal, the Windows Azure pack, the VMM console. Then, in a couple of months' time, potentially we may want to update. Okay, I don't want to go and have to manually update each server. I can just make an update to the service template, and it will then go and deploy that to any VMs that were deployed using that template. So I don't have to manually go and re-update every server individually. So we can create that service template easily inside VMM. We can specify the different tiers and the hardware layers that we need, the logical networks we want to use for that environment, the OS, the apps, the load balancers. Don't just think about the Windows platform. What if I wanted to run a Linux box in there for a reason as well? We can deploy multiple different OSs. It's not just about just the Windows platform. Also, load balancers. When you're configuring these service templates, I can specify that I need a load balancer. And if I've configured VMM to create the load, to talk to my load balancer, it will automatically, when I deploy the service template, create the VMs, then it'll go talk to the load balancer and say, you know what, I need a VIP. This is the IP I want you to use, and I want you to point it to these two servers that are on these IP addresses. And I want to use these ports, whether it's 443, 80. You don't have to manually send something to the network guys or whoever it is looking after your load balancers to get them to do that. So you're fast-tracking and speeding up that deployment process. We have their profiles in VMM. So we have our hardware profile where we configure the RAM, the CPU, the network adapters, the DVD drives, the hard drives we want to use. We have our guest OS profile where we specify the computer names you want to use, whether you want to add it to the domain, product keys, do you have a specific product key you need to use, what time zone is this server being deployed in. If you're doing geolocations, you're going to want to be able to change the time zones that you're using. But you don't want to manually go and configure it, so you would just have multiple OS profiles, and when the customer deploys, they pick which OS profile they want to use, depending on which country the deployment's going in. Application profiles. So if we're using AppV, whether we're using Microsoft Web Deploy to deploy web applications, are we using Microsoft SQL servers and using the SQL profiles to deploy SQL? So when we look at deploying SQL, we're able to make sure that we have a consistent experience every time. We have those profiles, the configuration information. We have the named instance information. We have the product keys. So that you can inject your license keys or the customer's license keys for SQL, if they're using license mobility. We also have configuration, the media that they need to add. The administrator security mode, do you want it Windows authentication? Do you want it mixed mode authentication? Do you want to set the ESA password? What SQL configuration file supports are you going to support? You can define the accounts based in the profile, so the service accounts. You can set the agent and reporting services accounts. Define run as accounts. We can also set the connections. So when we do that deployment, we can now use with SQL 2012, SP1 and CU2 and above, or if you're playing with SQL 2014 yet, we can start to do sysprepped images of SQL. And not just standalone SQL, but SQL clusters as well. So it's not just about deploying standalone SQL servers, it's about deploying SQL clusters as well. So some other tips and guidance around service templates. At the moment, there is a limitation in service templates. You can only add generation one VMs. Okay, with 2012 R2, we have generation one and generation two VMs, but the service templates haven't been upgraded yet for generation two VMs, okay? It's coming, I can't give you a deadline, but it is not far away. We also have several predefined service settings available, so you can predefine an at computer name, etc. The VM IDs, you can have self-generate as well. We also have execution of custom scripts within the service instances for VMs. So when you create the templates, we can get it to automatically do tasks after it's deployed or before it's deployed. So if you've got executable scripts or executables that you want to run after the VM started for the first time, we can execute them as well. So we have our pre and post install methods and processes there as well. So if you have third-party applications you need to deploy, we can trigger those deployments as well. So we have asymmetric provisioning within a tier. So the tier can run a different script on the first node and then a different script on the second server. So for example, if you're deploying two domain controllers and you've scripted it, you need to run one script for the first domain controller, which creates the forest, creates the domain. And then when we execute a second domain controller, we don't need to redo that same process. All we're doing is a DC promo, and it's a minimalistic process, unlike the first deployment of the domain controller, okay? Or if you're deploying an Exchange server, you don't need to do the sys prep and the domain prep, AD prep, etc., on the second and third servers. You only need to do that on the first one, okay? So there's a range of different things we could do with that. They're just some basic examples that come off the top of my head at the moment. We have the full lifecycle support for script application deployment, so we can have a new option now to replace the GCE as an app deployment. We can also script command line and parameters as part of the service deployment. And then we can also use that process to update as well. So we have a tool in VMM called Service Designer so that you can go and create your service templates. As you can see on the screen, we have multiple different service template tiers. So let me just cover them off for you. So in here you can see we have a application tier, we have our web tier, and we have our database tier in this example. So we're using a finance application, so we have our finance service up the top here. We then have our application tier, our finance tier, which is our web server, and our database server. And here we can see the name, the OS, the CPU, the memory that each of them have. We can also see the network adapters and the network that they're going to be plugged into. So when we go through the deploy service, through the deployment preview, we can also see an option in here to set the computer name, the pet shop password, the pet shop username, the SQL computer name, the SQL server admin, etc. So we can actually pre-configure some of those configuration settings. So the question is, can I bring in pre-configured information or settings that I've configured in Config Manager into the service templates? Unfortunately, the answer is at the moment, no. Okay, but you can point to those OSD settings. You just can't import them. So we have our service template components, where we have our VM template in the middle, we have our VHDs on the left, and then we have our hardware profiles, guest OS profile, and SQL profile and application profiles down the bottom. We have our computing tier and our load balancer templates. Then we have our service template, which is the hierarchy up the top. We then have our settings, application host profiles, and the other information that we need to do the deployment. So we select the tier based on the deployment order that we want to deploy the service as. So we create a new VM from the template. We power on and wait for the VM to power up. We then install the VMM guest agent on that VM. We then deploy the application profile level pre-installed GCE processes. We then apply any application pre-installed GCE. We install any applications, do any post-application requirements, add a load balancer in, and we're done. Okay, so we're able to deploy a server very simply. That's the process that a service template deployment would go through. As I said earlier, if you click the services tab in the ribbon when you're in VMM, we're able to see the service, and then we're able to drill down. So in this environment here, let me just zoom in. So here I can see my Pet Shop production service, and then I can see my mid tier, my web tier, and my SQL tier. But if you notice in my SQL tier, I can also see the databases. So it's not just about the VM, it's also the databases and the applications that are running on those VMs. So we're pulling a lot of information in so that very easily I can see the service and I can go, well, actually, it's not the server. It could have been that one of the databases dismounted or something. Yep.
Databases that are seen here, are only the databases that have been created that way, or would it see also any other database that was created manually or
somehow? So the question is, are we going to see the databases that were created through the service template? This service template actually didn't create any databases. These are the databases that were created when the application installed. So the databases will be whatever databases are running on that SQL instance.
How does it actually see that information? Is that like authentication in the TDS, or is that just aware because it's guest VM on that
code? So the question is, how do we know and how do we see that information and get that information? Because we've deployed the VMM guest agent, we get access into the VMM and what's on the VM. Okay, it's one of the differences between a standard VM template deployment that you potentially, or a deployment you've done manually where you don't deploy the VMM guest agent. That's the differentiator. Okay, that guest agent just gives us more access into the VM. But again, this is using Virtual Machine Manager. You really should be looking at this sort of stuff through Ops Manager. We're just showing that you can do it through VMM. But personally, I'd be pointing you to you'd be using Ops Manager for that sort of monitoring and troubleshooting. So. So automatically pushed throughout the System Center suite for monitoring and CMDB accuracy. Okay, we have the service views. So in this environment, you can see up on the screen, we have our Pet Shop service up the top. We then have our mid-tiers, which are our web server, our SQL server, and our application tier. You can see the servers that make up the tier as you drill down. And then as we drill down further, I can see the network adapter, I can see the hard disk that's associated with it, and we could continue to keep drilling down even further and further. So we're really having a systematic approach to also application updates. So with some of the technology we have available to us, instead of having to manually reinstall an application, we can capture the application installation configuration settings. So one of the problems you have is some applications are great, they go on, they're pretty basic to install, but some applications go and make registry modifications. or do some other weird and wonderful things on the system that you may not pick up. So we have the tool set built in that we can actually capture the information that is changed when an application deploys. When we capture that information, it means that we've got a configuration file that we can use to redeploy that application, so that we can easily upgrade applications. So I can, for example, say I install my finance application and it makes a heap of changes to a server. Once I've captured that, if I want to do an upgrade, I could do an upgrade in my test environment, capture the configuration settings, the update changes, okay, and then I can redeploy a new VM or apply those updates to an existing VM, and it'll only make the changes that are needed for the update. Okay, so we're able to push out applications on top of whether we're replacing the OS with a new version or whether we're just doing an upgrade to the application. So if I wanted to, I could deploy, for example, the application is running on Windows 2012 and I want to replace the OS with 2012 R2. I could push out a new VM. I could say, here's my 2012 R2 OS, and then I can just push out the application and it'll make the install of that application on that OS. I don't have to manually go and deploy that application. So whether the OS and the applications are .NET Java, there's a range of different applications we can support in that process. So we can also provide a single source for truth, okay? So when we're doing the upgrade process, we can make sure that we're using the same version across the whole platform. We can also do in-place upgrades where we change the application or template settings without replacing the OS image, okay? So we could change the memory, update the application profile, and deploy any changes that we've made. Okay, so if we use service templates, any VMs that use that template, if we make the changes, we can push it out to all of those VMs without having to manually go to each one and change it. We also have image-based updates where we want to change out the OS. So we want to go from 2012 to 2012 R2. We can just replace the OS image and then reinstall the applications and restore the state to the previous version. Okay, so the customer won't even notice that we've really changed the OS. Really good for those that are doing VDI or terminal services or remote desktop services. We can also maintain the application resources. So if you've got multiple sites, you're not going to want to have a VMM library on one central location. And then if your data center's on the other side of the world or the country, you don't want to be sending it across your WAN, okay? So we can replicate and sync content between your VMM library servers. We can do it in an automated fashion, or we could do manual exporting and importing when we choose to. We can also import and export service templates, so you can test them in your test and dev environment, which I know you all have because you don't test everything in production. So we do those service template testing, we then export from our dev and test environment and bring it into our production environment. We then have our VMM server synchronization so that we can also replicate those changes to other data centers if we have them. So I'm just going to flick over to a demonstration on the service VMM and how we create clouds in VMM. Okay, so let me just reconnect. Let's see if we can make it a little bit more viewable for you. Okay, so let me just disconnect and we'll just reconnect. Try and minimize my zooming for you, since some of you Okay. So can everyone read that okay, or do I need to zoom it in a little bit? Can everyone up the back see that or not? No, you can't see it? Okay. All right, so what I'll do is I'll zoom in a second. So what we have here is I'm going to demonstrate how we create clouds and provision clouds for customers in VMM. So what we have here is we have a default VMM install. So as you can see in VMM, for those that haven't used VMM for a little while or are used to older versions, we have our tenants up the top. And in the tenants, we have the user accounts. In our environment, we're using WAP. So let me just click on the tenants for you and you can see what happens. So I'm seeing the VMs that are available in my tenants. Over here, you can see that there's a user role for Craig. If I click on overview, you can see there's a different type of view where I can see the services that are available. You can see that I've got zero services, but I've got two virtual machines. Because I haven't used service templates to do the deployments, I've just traditionally deployed traditional VMs. So down here I have my clouds. I'm going to create a new cloud. So we go to create cloud. I'm going to type the name of my cloud. I'm going to call this cloud Leon's cloud. So as you can see, I've called it Leon's cloud. I'm going to tick all hosts. If I wanted to and I had different groupings, I could pick to choose a specific group of hosts, but in this instance, because it's my demo environment, I've only got two hosts, so I'm just going to pick all hosts. In here, I have my logical networks that I can pick from. I'm going to pick external so that my VMs can talk to the rest of my network. I don't have any load balancers in my environment, but if I did, I would pick a load balancer here. I can pick Microsoft Network Load Balancing, but I don't have that configured on any of my environment at the moment. So I will just skip through to the next section. I don't have any VIP templates for my load balancers because I don't have one, but you would see a list here if you had any VIPs. Port classifications are an important component. So for example, if I had multiple different network adapter settings that I wanted to use. So if I've got a customer that I'm selling low bandwidth internet connections or network connections, I'd pick the low bandwidth configuration. If I've got a customer that I want to give high bandwidth to, I'd pick the high bandwidth classification. And that'll dictate the quotas and QoS that are enforced on the network adapter. And you can customize and create your own network port classifications. These are just the default ones. We then have the storage. I've only got one storage available to my hosts. So I just pick my local storage, which gives me, 1.2 terabytes of storage. Not too bad for my little two laptop demos. We then have our libraries. So if I wanted to, I could specify a specific library. I could browse and pick the library where I'm storing my VMs for that customer or that cloud. I could also specify read-only libraries. So if I've got a generic read-only library that I want everyone to use, I could tick and add a read-only library. I'm not going to specify a specific library for this cloud because I've only got the one library in my test environment. So we're just going to leave that as default for now. I'm going to go down to my capacity. And in this capacity, I'm now going to start making some changes. So I'm going to change my virtual CPU count to 10. I'm going to change my memory so that this customer can only deploy 8 gig. I'm going to change the storage down to, let's say, 200 gig. And virtual machine count, I want to set to 2. So here you can see I've restricted that cloud to a specific subset of resources. Okay? I've given them a portion of what my cloud is. So we hit next. Now here I can specify my compatibility. So in my demo environment, I've only got Hyper-V, but if I had a Xen server or an ESX server that I wanted them to be able to deploy to, I could tick that box and then I would be able to deploy onto those hypervisors. So I'm going to hit next. And it's just a summary page. One of the key things in here as well is for those that are looking at automation is I can click the View Script button and it would show me the script if I wanted to run this command in the VMM PowerShell. Okay, so if I'm going to do this task multiple times, I could export the script, save the script, and then I can modify it for each customer or cloud I want to deploy, change the configuration, and run it through PowerShell or through Orchestrator or some other automation process instead of manually going through the wizard. So we're giving you the tools to help you get to automation. Okay, so you can go through the wizard the first time and then just modify the script every time after. So let's click finished. You can see the job, it's created my new cloud up here. So we can see that the job completed successfully, that there was no errors, and it gives me the values that are set for that cloud. And now, if I come back here, I can see Leon's cloud. It's got no services, no nothing. It gives me the cloud summary of the memory, the storage, and the CPU count that's available to me. So that's a very basic, here is how we do a cloud, okay? We can do a generic cloud for a shared environment, or you could give customers their dedicated cloud. I'm just going to switch across. I demonstrated a little bit earlier today and yesterday, we went through what the front end of the Windows Azure pack looked like. Okay? I'm going to show you now what the back end looks like. Okay? Because we're using the Azure cloud to manage to manage this environment. Okay? So the way that we connect it into VMM. So what we have here is I have my website clouds. I have my VM clouds, my service bus clouds, my SQL servers, MySQL servers, automation plans and user accounts and user costing. This is the back end as you as an administrator and service provider sees. So the one we're going to concentrate is on VM clouds. Sorry. Thank you. So we have our VM clouds. So here I can see I have one cloud. It's my demo environment. Normally in a production environment, you'd have a few. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to click on it and drill down. So what you can see here is VMM 01 is my VMM server that I've connected this portal to. Okay, so I've connected it to my VMM server via the Service Provider Foundation APIs. When I click on it, I can now see the three clouds that I saw in VMM. I can see the hosted and management clouds, and I can see the Leon's cloud that I just created. And you can see in here as well, I have the capacity for virtual machines, cores, memory, and everything that I configured in VMM. And I can click across the top here and browse for virtual machines and search for virtual machines. So if a customer's having an issue, I can search for them. I can see the networks. I can also do automation. We haven't linked this to any runbooks yet. We're going to do that later on in the process. And we also have a gallery of feed. And the gallery will pull resources from my VMM library, or you can point it to a Microsoft Cloud service and pull down some sample templates from the Microsoft Cloud. So I can come down here and I can see user accounts that have been created in the system. Okay, so down here, I have my user accounts. You can see that there's a Craig account. There is a test at no email account. And you can see the subscriptions and the date that they enrolled or subscribed to the systems. But we're going to go to the plan section for a minute. and we're going to create a new plan. So to let a customer sign up and create VMs, I need to create a plan. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a very basic plan. So I can come in, I can click new down the bottom, and I'm going to click create plan. I'm going to call my plan Leon's plan, because it might as well go with my Leon's cloud. And in here, I can specify the services I want this plan to allow the customer to provision. Do I want them to provision websites? No, not in this instance. We're just going to go the virtual machine cloud. All I wanted the customer to do is be able to create VMs. I don't care about websites or SQL or MySQL in this scenario. All we're worrying about is this customer is signing up for VM hosting. So we click next, and then it goes and creates the plan for me. Okay, as you can see, the plan's been created, but it's saying it's not configured and that it's private. Private means that a person can't just go to my sign up page and pick it from the list. Okay, we still need to configure it and make it publicly available. So let's click on it and let's configure it. So when I first go in, there's not a lot of information being populated because we haven't configured it yet. So I'm going to click on my virtual machine clouds, and we're going to pick the different options that I want to make available to customers. Okay? So up the top here, I'm going to pick my virtual machine management server that I'm going to use. I'm now going to tick the plan, the cloud that I want this plan to be deployed in. So, okay, I want all my VMs deployed in my Leon's cloud. Okay, so I'm subscribing to my Leon's cloud resource. In here, I can either leave the defaults that I've configured in the cloud. Okay, so I could say I'm just going to leave it as default, so when someone subscribes, they have full access to the resources of the cloud. Or I could say, you know what? I don't want them to be able to create two VMs. I'm going to restrict them to one. And then as I scroll down, we also see virtual networks. I have the ability to create as many networks as I like. I could limit that. So let's limit that because I don't want them creating as many as they want. We'll limit that to two. And then down here, which I'll zoom in because it's a bit small, we can also specify the megabytes a second in and out. So we can start to tune some thresholds around network capability. And I can also configure the number of site-to-site VPNs per network. So as you can see, when we start looking at the gateway and everything else we've been talking about, we can now start passing some of that capability to the customer so they can create their own networks, their own VPN site-to-site connections. So I'm going to come down, and I'm going to add the networks. I've only got one network, so let's add the external network. I can also add hardware profiles. So I'll zoom in because there's a few here. So these hardware profiles specify what my customer's size of VM is going to be. So I can deploy a hardware profile of one core and a gig of RAM and a generation one VM. Or I could give them the option to do a 2012 R2 host with 2 gig of RAM and 2 cores. Or I could specify a small hardware profile of 1 core, 512 mega RAM, and it's a generation 2 VM. Okay? So we have the choices there of what hardware profiles the customer can pick. And I would normally associate prices and things in the back end for my billing as well. So that would associate to a billing process. And I can also, down the bottom here, add templates. So I'm going to add a template. So I've decided in this environment, I'm going to let them create both different types of templates. They can create a generation one Windows 2012 server, and I'm going to let them also create a generation two Windows 2012 R2 server. So they can pick which one they want. I don't have a gallery feed at the moment, and we come down the bottom section here. And you can see down here, I've got additional settings where I can create, view, and restore virtual machine checkpoints. Do I want them to do that? No, I don't want them creating checkpoints on my environment. View and restore virtual machine checkpoints? No, we're not playing checkpoints today. I can also specify whether I want to save virtual machine states. So instead of starting and stopping VMs, do I want them to be able to save the VM in the state that it was in so they don't have to reboot it or something? Or do I want them to be able to store the VM in the VMM library so they can deploy other servers from it? We're not going to tick that box. And an important box is, do I want them to connect to the console of the virtual machine? So not RDP to it, but the console of the actual guest OS. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tick yes for that. And I'm going to click save. You can see down here, comes up and tells me the update to the plan's been completed. So I hit OK and close off all the status boxes. And I can hit the back button and it'll take me back here. And now I can see that everything has been completed and is active. And I'm in a configured state. But one of the downsides still is, it's still in a private state. So I want to make this publicly available for people to sign up with. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to change the access and I'm going to make it public. You can also see down, let me just go there again. I've also got a decommission option down there. So if I've got a plan I don't want anyone to use anymore, I can decommission it. And then it'll remove it from the list of people being able to select. Okay? So if I've changed my mind and I don't want a plan anymore because it's outdated or something, or I don't want to offer that service anymore, I can decommission it. So let's make this one public. Tick yes. The update is in progress. You must wait for things to finish, all right? One of the big frustrating things we hear from people is they're trying to do things, but they haven't waited for it to finish, okay? You're not going to be able to do the next task with a plan until it's completed. So please be a bit patient. It takes a second or two for it to update. So then I can come back to the main session, and in here I can now see my plan is in the list, it's public, configured, and I don't see any subscriptions against it yet. Popularity is at a level 3 because I haven't had anyone deploy it yet. The more people deploy it, the lower the number goes. Okay, so you can see from a very quick view what would be your most popular plans. So you could actually pass that information to the sales team and go, you know what? This type of plan is our most popular. Okay, so you've got some other information in the system as well. So that's a little bit about the back end of the Azure Pack. We're going to come back and have a look at the admin side of the Azure Pack a little bit later on when we start going through service management automation in a little bit more detail. But that's a brief intro into the back-end admin site for the Windows Azure Pack. So that's where we'll leave that demonstration for now, and we'll come back to it a little bit later. So has anyone got any questions on that? Because I noticed no one asked questions, so I'm hopefully everyone got the hint yesterday and wait until the end.
So if we're doing things not just VMs, but applications, let's say Link or SharePoint or whatever.
Yep. So this is purely designed for Azure-ish type services, okay? There are ways, which we're going to go through later today and tomorrow, how we can adjust and add additional features, and that's around the automation section that we're going to show you later on, probably early tomorrow morning. Yes, so we could customize this. I can't show you one of the demos I wanted to show you because the customizations we did to the previous version of Windows Azure Pack, they made some changes to security methods and ours doesn't work anymore. So we're waiting for our development team to update it. But we actually extended this to do desktop as a service. So customers could actually come into here, pick that they wanted to deploy a new session host. It would actually go make sure it had the broker service knew about the new terminal server session hosts we were creating, created the session hosts, and made it publicly available. So it deployed the VM, then installed terminal services on it, and went down that whole process. So you would do the same thing, and you can do the same thing with the other services, okay? You just need to extend it. You need to add web pages to capture the information you want. So you want link. So there's a lot of there's a process there. And that's why we're talking about Windows Azure Pack is an entry-level starting point, okay? We're giving you a product that will let you get into infrastructure as a service, website hosting, database hosting from day one without having to spend any time and money, okay? It's here's a solution out of the box. Of course, it's not going to fit everyone's needs, and that's why we talk to you about the decision you need to make around, do I customize, do I build from scratch, or do I go and buy a third-party control panel like Extend ASP, Parallels, Citrix, Ensem, and anyone else who's out in the marketplace. Okay, so this is a starting point, and we're going to show you the SMA engine and Orchestrator runbooks over today and tomorrow, which help give you an idea of how we can do some of the automation processes so that you can deploy an Exchange server or a Link server or an RDS server, okay, or even AD users, Exchange users, Link users, all those sort of functions and features. Okay, so there are ways to do it. It's just a matter of, do you have the dev skills? Do you have the time? Do you want to do custom development? Or do you want to buy off the shelf like an Extend or a Parallels product? Was there any other questions? Yep.
Is there some integration with, say, the storage so that I can deploy
So the question is there any storage integration with the Windows Azure Pack? The answer is no. You would configure that in the template configuration and hardware profiles in VMM, and you would allow VMM to manage the storage and everything else. If you wanted the customer to be able to create their own LUNs or an admin to be able to create LUNs and things through the portal, you can customize it to do it. But again, it's going into the custom development process. Okay. And again, depending on your skill set, depending if you want to investigate working with an SI like us or another SI to do those customizations, you can. But again, do you want to be a development company? Do you want to have development cycles? Or do you want to buy off the shelf? Or does the Windows Azure Pack do enough for you? It's going to be a case-by-case basis with every company. We see companies make different decisions every day, okay, based on their own requirements. We haven't found a service provider that has the same requirements yet, okay? You all want different things. You all want to sell in different ways. Yes. So the question is, can the console access to the VMs, and is it available to users? The answer is yes, okay? The Windows 2012 team have embedded RDP into the hypervisor in a much more detailed way than was available before, okay? So what that means to you is we can actually point your customers to an RDP gateway server, and they can go securely through HTTPS through the gateway and get console access to their VM, whether that VM's running Linux or Windows, okay? It's not an RDP session like a traditional RDP terminal server session, it's access to the console. We're just using the RDP protocols to do it. Okay? If you want to open up the VMs to the internet and not go through an RDP gateway, you can do that. And they will hit the console button and they'll go directly to their VM. However, that VM's now on the internet and has ports open. Personally, I'd be recommending you go through an RDP gateway. Okay? Because you don't want to be putting those servers on the internet. All right. So I would recommend you convince your customers to go through a gateway. It's more secure, and it's a much better process. Okay? But we can give them proper console access on a Linux or a Windows OS. It's not a terminal server session that was the limitation in previous versions. So the question is it a full console access, copy and paste? All the testing I've done, yes, the copy and paste function works. More so on a Windows box than a Linux box.
With all
Sorry, what was that?
Switching the VM on and off.
So the question was, can you switch the VM on and off? Yes, you can switch it on and off. You can either hit the start and stop button on the website, or you can actually go onto the VM console and start and stop it. So the question is, if I've got a heap of already existing VMs and I deploy this new environment and I want to import all my old VMs over, so I've done the migration to my new platform, VMM can see it, how do I see it in here? So there is some basic functionality that we have to do in VMM to get it to appear in the Windows Azure pack if it's not a brand new server. Okay, so there is a process that you go through to import them into the Azure pack. It is possible. I'm not going to say how easy or hard it is, but it is possible. Because I don't know what your skill set is. Is there any other questions? No? Oh. So the question is there additional languages for the Azure pack? That's a very good question, and the answer is yes. The Azure pack is not English only. I believe the admin portal is English only. Oh, no, there we go. So in the admin portal and the tenant portal, we have a drop-down box, and just so you can see, wrong button. They're the languages that the Azure pack supports out of the box. I'm not going to switch to one of those languages because I can't read them. But you can have a list of these are the default languages the Azure pack supports from day one. Okay, so there's no having to go get translators to redo it for you. It's there out of the box. Okay, most of the languages most service providers ask for are on there. Okay, has anyone got a language they need that's not on that list? No? Everyone's happy with those languages? Cool. It's good to know. All right, what we're going to do is we're going to stop there.